Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome back, sports fans, to another episode of the Charity Stripe Podcast, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one sports podcast network in Los Angeles. For those listening at home, on the road, in the air, or in the water, do you believe? We have a great show for you guys today. A lot has gone on. Big news in the NFL, big games in the NBA, and plus some crazy things happening in baseball, as always. So buckle up, tuck it into your waistband, because here we go. 3, 2, 1. We're back.
And now, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. We are live on the Charity Stripe Podcast with your hosts, Alex, Josh, and Nick.
We're back, baby. It's the Charity Stripe. Hit your free throws because they are free. So 342 coming hot at you guys in so 341. And I'm joined on this one by Alex Toss Me the Rock Tosopoulos, Nikki Snacks Kreider. And a lot has gone down in the wide world of sports. But before we started talking about sports, we were off air and we were discussing craziness in the world of Subway and sandwiches today. Apparently, there's no tuna in the Subway sandwiches, in the Subway tuna. Somebody took the sandwich, sent it to a lab, did a plethora of tests on it, and no tuna was found. And I, for one, I'm not an avid Subway eater. I used to be, but after actually living with you, Toss, you love Jersey Mike's. And so living with you, I got on the Jersey Mike's train. I was eating meat. Now I'm not eating meat regardless. Haven't been eating much tuna from Subway, but as a stand today, I went and got tuna from Subway. And that was pretty much because I'm sick of people ruining things for everybody. Well, we can't enjoy things anymore, and I'm pissed.
Why do you think they sent it to the lab? I mean, it's pretty ridiculous that they sent it to a lab. I like to think that it started with a couple of guys like ourselves, and we got in an argument, and one guy was like, "There's not real tuna in the sandwich," and the other guy was like, "No, there definitely is. I can taste the tuna. I've had tuna more than 100 times in my life. I know what tuna tastes like." And then they sent it to the lab.
I would like to think how that's how it started. I would have a smaller appreciation for it if it was some couch room chat, but like, I don't think that was the case. There was DNA tests. I guess tuna has DNA. That would make sense. It's a living species. But to me, it's like, what? Like all of a sudden there's like real cocaine or like in like Dunkin' Donuts coffee. And now like, we can't drink that.
I just don't appreciate that we caught it at the tail end of things. Like now we know exactly what the facts are. And the facts are that there's no tuna in the Subway sandwiches, the Subway tuna sandwiches. What I wish had happened was that Subway had done a meeting of the minds with betonline.ag and they had a prop bet on whether it did have tuna in it or it didn't, because that's where I go to put all my bets in. Betonline.ag, sign up today, get your free deposit when you sign up today, and you can bet on a lot of different things. You can't bet on that, but you can bet on the rest of the Eastern Conference Finals and the rest of the Western Conference Finals. So that's fun.
That was your best one. Thanks. Was good. That was really that was really good. There are bets that were made. But yeah, that was my little diatribe on fucking Subway tuna. But there were bets that were made. There was a bet made in our household, Toss, on who was going to take out the trash, myself or George. The other two roommates are out of town. It was straight up Hawks, Bucks. I had the Hawks. And then we changed the bet. I said, I'll just take out the trash if he tells you and Will that you guys got tickets, because I hate delivering people bad news. And so now I have to take out the trash, but I did bet on the Hawks to win, and they did. D-Jack Hobbs lock it in for a victory. Trae Young was fantastic. One of our buddies, Nick's roommate, speaking of roommates, we were discussing with him, and he was saying that Trae Young can't do this every game, and there's no way that they'll really kind of close out the series. That was his sentiment. But I feel as if that we've seen, at least in the other playoff games, a lot of guys have stepped up. I mean, obviously Bogdanovich is not at full health, but Herter stepped up in game 7. Collins ended up having a fantastic game. I feel like every time Collins hits a late game 3, he's always chirping at the other bench. He hits a corner 3, chirps the other bench, and like jogs down the court. It's awesome. And then Capella was an animal inside. I think that was a big Bucks problem. They had a lot of second chance opportunities late in the game, and obviously they capitalized on them.
Yeah, there was one possession where I think the Hawks got 3 offensive rebounds, and then Solomon Hill got a corner 3 and knocked it down. those kind of possessions can't happen in the fourth quarter. I mean, this game was tight the entire way. I don't know if Trae Young can do this every single game, but as we saw in game seven against the 76ers, he doesn't have to. And the longer the series goes on, hopefully the healthier Bogdanovich gets, which will of course be really, really useful in the Hawks progressing past the Bucks. But Giannis played really, really well tonight. I was really impressed. Everything we've been telling him to do, Josh, you especially, labeling him as a big man, as a center. He certainly is. And when he stays within 10 feet of the hoop, he's nearly unstoppable. I mean, he was catching lob after lob after lob.
Well, yeah, I texted Utah, and I was like, both teams' interior defense was weak. I mean, I think Solomon Hill missed the shot, but they had gotten the offensive rebound. Because I remember being like, why the hell is Solomon Hill even touching the basketball unless it's an absolute necessity with less than 3 minutes left in the game? He actually had a great foul on Giannis at the end of the game, so Giannis couldn't kick it back out to Lopez. But once Giannis started going in the paint, and him and Holiday were just running lob, they had back-to-back-to-back plays like where Collins and Capella couldn't body him, and he just pogo-sticked on them. I mean, it was really fantastic. I think, you know, it was really interesting to see what the Hawks were doing. The Hawks basically, once Giannis like 12, 15 feet away from the hoop, they would just back off of him. But like Giannis had a lot of confidence in his passing abilities today and was really moving the rocks. He's like, all right, you're going to give me the space. I may not necessarily shoot, but there's going to be guys on my team that can shoot the basketball. I'm going to find them when they're open. And he really was feeding everybody and doing a great job facilitating as well.
Yeah, it's just an example of all of your guys have to step up, especially your big players in playoff games. And Chris Middleton had 15 points. So he missed the shots that he needed to make for them to win. Jrue Holiday actually had a really good offensive game, and so did Giannis. And he just didn't step up. And you can't rely on guys like Pat Connaughton, Bryn Forbes, and Brooke Lopez to do that for you.
Yeah, and Bobby Portis, shout out to him. He did play well. Middleton, I think, have you been disappointed in Middleton in this playoffs? Like after that game one against the Heat where he hit that game winner, since then I've kind of been like a little like, you're supposed to be an all-star.
Yeah, he hasn't been playing like an all-star.
If you're an all-star and you're the quote-unquote number two guy on this Bucks team, you have to be playing like that at this point, if in this late in the season. You can't be showing up for 15 points at home in game one in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's why they lost. I mean, I don't know what else Giannis and Holiday could have done realistically, and they're a very thin team, as we've been discussing, as we've been saying throughout the playoffs. Gut check reaction, you think the Hawks keep the advantage and take this one, or is there a lot of game left?
I think this one will go deep, could go the distance all the way to seven. Again, like the Hawks won this game, but it was anyone's game the entire time. I think they had some trouble defensively. Like Giannis really had his way with them. I can't make an assessment at this point as to who's going to win the series. It's too up in the air for me.
Yeah, we need to see game two. If the Hawks somehow win game two, obviously it's blood in the water. If it's if it's a close one in game two and they go 1-1, two close games heading to game three in Atlanta, it's very tight. If the Bucks go out and blow them out, then I think that's like there's a bit of comeback to reality, and then we really have to see what happens in game three. Nick, to you, man. Clippers down 2-0. First two games, obviously, were in Phoenix. So you do go home to Los Angeles. First two series, they were down 2-0. As a Clippers fan, are you nervous? How did you feel about Paul George missing those two free throws late in the game?
Well, you got to hit your free throws because they're free.
I mean, how long have you been saying this? 4 years at this point?
At this point, yeah. But I would say, yes, I'm nervous because they're likely getting Chris Paul back. And the Clippers are likely not getting Kawhi back. So that adds another factor to it. I heard someone on the radio, I'm not going to name any names, but they were saying from the Clippers perspective that they want the Clippers to lose game two so they can go down 2-0 and play like they did in the first two series and win the series. And I think that's so stupid. It's so ludicrous to say, I want my team to lose game two so they can play better for the next four or five games. That's ridiculous.
You've got enough.
You ever want to lose a game? Ever want to purposely lose a game?
If you can't find the motivation in the Western Conference Finals, like when else are you going to find it?
Yeah,
exactly. But with Paul George, I mean, playoff P, right? He's been playing out of his mind lately. And then when it comes down to closing out a game, he choked.
He was so close to redemption. Like he was right there. He's like, all right, I'm back. like Paul George can close it out, redeem himself, and then obviously he kind of shats the bed.
Was that the longest last 2 minutes in an NBA regulation game we've ever had?
It was too much. We saw a stat, I think it was on Twitter, that said like the last 5 minutes of the Clippers game, or sorry, the last 90 seconds of the game took 33 real minutes.
Oh my gosh.
There were 5 reviews on 5 field goals.
That's insane.
That was,
I read that wrong. There's as many reviews as field goals, 5 and 5.
Okay.
Like they were reviewing the Ayton play for like 10 minutes.
It was ridiculous. Dunk.
Like just like get it over with. You know, we know how much time's on the clock. Then they go back to the deck and say, okay, hold on, wait, we got to check it again.
Like, well, and the funny thing was like, they got the time wrong on the clock. Like they actually gave the Clippers from just my eyeball test on the couch, like too much time.
An extra point too, I think.
Yeah, which is like pretty substantial when you're down under a second. But
did you guys have a feeling they were going to run that play? Was I the only one that was like, I think that I was like,
I think a lot of people have already talked about this, but it was, that's the play, the only play you really can run. Like you're going to lob it to Ayton in the middle. The fact that DeMarcus Cousins wasn't blocking off that pass is a testament to, and it's the exact same thing that happened against the Celtics when they put Taco Fall in last year. You can't put a guy who hasn't played the entire game in to guard the inbounder. Their awareness, they're not in the game. They haven't been playing. They are unaware of the flow of the game. And it was apparent there. I mean, you got to get props to Jay Crowder because that pass was absolutely pinpoint. But
it was a great pass, but why is IZ on him as well? Like, I know Batum is smaller, but he's more athletic.
Well, you figure he's going to get something player at the rim and he's going to get his hands in there. He's got big old paws and he's a 7-foot guy. Booker had a great chip screen. Like it was just a well-designed play and perfectly executed. And it was absolutely ridiculous. The reviewing is, it's too much. I get that it's the last 2 minutes of the game. You want to get every call right. Get in, get out.
And then NFL, they get in, get out.
Yeah.
With even baseball these days, they get the call pretty quick. I don't understand why basketball takes so long.
They're just so scared because those referee reports used to come out in those games. And the refs used to get fined when they got a call wrong. And like it was really stupid because then the NBA would be like, oh, announcing after the fact that they got the call wrong. But like at that point, who cares? They've already ruled on the call. It doesn't really matter.
So why don't they have like a control center like Major League Baseball does or like NFL does, where they have other referees doing the reviews that aren't refereeing the game? Make it go faster. Take out the whole
that would make sense
factor of getting fans pissed off at the wrong call because those referees aren't the ones making the call. Like they happen in every sport besides basketball.
Like the go to the New York type situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it would make sense. It would help them move the flow. And it's a shame, honestly, that's even being talked about because that game was great.
That's one of the fun series. Yeah. It's a really fun series, but now Chris Paul is probable to come back and Kawhi's not. And I mean, that just gives the Suns more of an edge. Now I'm curious to see if Kawhi does come back, maybe game 4, 5, 6, 7, if those even make it that far, does it swing to the Clippers' advantage?
Well, we also don't know what Kawhi we're getting back.
Yeah.
Right?
We don't know what Chris Paul we're getting back. I mean, again, his injury was not really physical. I mean, that shoulder obviously is ailing, but
but it's a COVID rest. It's a COVID scare.
I think he'll be, I'm presuming he's fine, obviously, health-wise. I think the Suns go up 3-0, and I don't even think they bring Kawhi back. I think it's just over. Which is like, if you win this game, then obviously, you know, you have to like consider bringing him back. You don't want to bring him back, obviously, prematurely and hurt him. We saw what happened when he was, you know, not handled properly with the Spurs. Totally ruined their relationship, and he was gone afterwards. But I don't know. I don't think this is the last time we're seeing Kawhi as a Clipper.
I don't either.
If I may say. I think he's kind of chilling.
I think at this point, no matter what happens in this series, they've gone deep enough where you're keeping the gang together.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, hopefully the gang minus Ty Lue.
I don't know, man.
Ty Lue's chilling, and I am
he's getting a lot of praise right now. And
you think so?
Yeah, he's proved me wrong this past couple
I would rather have Chauncey Billups.
Well, I think if Chauncey's going somewhere else, it'll be really interesting to see how good of a coach Ty Lue is by himself, right? Because I think at least the three of us really believe that Chauncey has had an enormous impact on that roster from a coaching standpoint and from a player development standpoint.
Yeah.
Big
time. Clearly. I don't think it's a coincidence Reggie Jackson's playing his best basketball again.
Yeah. One last thing.
Yeah.
One last thing I want to say just on from a coaching standpoint, there are so many, the high pick and roll is the most used weapon in basketball right now. I mean, both of these teams run it in the Western Conference. Both of these teams run it in the Eastern Conference. I don't understand how a coach doesn't just say, if Drew Holiday and Giannis are in the pick and roll together, you sag and you make sure Giannis can't catch a lob. I don't care if Drew Holiday shoots 15 floaters this game and they're open. Nothing can happen. Anything can happen except the Giannis dunk. Like you have to, and the same thing with Trae Young. It's like, you just have to make him, you got to make them make a decision, right? Like the Clippers, they had the same problem with Luka and Luka was tearing them apart. Like force that superstar to give up the ball in some way, make the other guy beat you. Because when it's the superstar who's taking either, you know, those floaters in the lane and it was Luka and it was Trae Young, they're always hitting them. Like you just got to make them make a decision. And I feel like half the time the big is so worried about making the wrong decision that they don't commit one way or the other, either step up on that driver and make him pass it around you or sag back and make him shoot a floater. Like just make the decision. They're caught in no man's land every single time.
It's a great point because I'm looking at it and they literally look like they're caught in no man's land. I'm watching it and the Hawks, it's Collins and Capella both out there at the same time. Not just two bigs, two extremely athletic bigs, obviously not Giannis athletic or Giannis size, but they should be able to put a body on Giannis. And again, going back to those alley-oop dunks, time in and time out, they kind of were both there, like looking at one and the other, like, weren't you supposed to make the move? And no one kind of made a decision on what to do with Giannis. And he was able to kind of get in there freely and just do his thing. I mean,
a guy who's won the MVP award twice. You're going to let him catch lobs. Was he not going to finish?
Just put a body on him. Like
it's the easiest 2 points in the game. It's a dunk.
They just put no body on him at all. And you know what? Honestly, kind of inversely to the Suns Clippers game, like, they were kind of letting them play a little bit. It wasn't as ticky tack. I felt like they were like kind of, it was a little bit more physical and they were letting them play a bit. I mean, I think the Trae Young floater, I mean, he was just getting that at will against the Knicks. I think teams are kind of, you know, a bit more receptive to that now. Still as good as defender Holiday is, he had a tough time and I don't think it's going to get much easier. I mean, he's really playing superb basketball and he's gotten to the point in his game where if he's not scoring well enough, he's facilitating. But I don't think this Bucks team is going to be down and out. I really wish Pandemic P hit those free throws so he was still playoff P. I hope the Clippers kind of take it to him in Los Angeles in game one, at least make things interesting. I think obviously we've seen it. This team can compete with them. It was close. This team can get hot and outshoot anybody. Look, when they've blown the Jazz out one of those games. So it's not fully over yet. Lottery, though, will go lottery quickly. Seems like the top five is pretty set, and I'm a little bummed about it. In the mock drafts I'm seeing, for those who don't know the results, Pistons won the lottery, followed by the Rockets, followed by the luckiest team arguably in sports, the Cavs. I mean, the Cavs are in the top three like every year. Is it just me? Like top three or four? I know they suck, but I feel like they always get lucky. They always get lucky, and they're always like, oh, the Cavs are in here again. The Raptors, which is great for that franchise, are in there, and the Magic. Yeah, that's lucky. The Magic, who's the GM, they had the fifth and eighth pick. The GM looked like he wanted to kill himself, which is not funny, but like he looked really sad. The top five looks...
Whose pick, because of the Rockets got two, but if the Rockets pick had fallen to five, they would have lost it to the Thunder. That's right. Yeah, it's good. It's huge for their franchise that they were able to retain it and hold on to one of the top two spots.
Yeah, and I think my question to you, I sent Toss, I kicked you a mock, and we're not going to go into the full thing, but just kind of keeping that top five, why do you think the Rockets are going to take, presuming Cade goes number one and there's no trade, which I had posed to somebody, like I posed on our Instagram, and people responded like, hey, the five and the eight by the Magic to the one for Cade, because as good as I think Cade is, I think this is a pretty deep draft class. A lot of valuable guys you can get out of the five and the eight spot. And I think the Pistons building some depth out would be nice. That's just, I don't know. That's me thinking a little outside the box.
Yeah.
presuming K goes number one in the Pistons, why do you think the Rockets are going Mobley, not Suggs? Whereas I think Suggs, they're going Suggs, not Mobley.
I think that it is such a rarity nowadays to find a big man who has all the tools and shown that he has can utilize the majority of those tools already in his college game. He doesn't need the ball. He's a great, excellent rim runner. He's a fantastic rim protector. He was arguably the best player defensively in college basketball this past year. He has the makings of a good big man shooter. He already can hit from mid-range, and you know that's just extending that 10 feet and consistently putting in the reps to he's got a great stroke. So, you know, you would think that he could eventually hit the ball from deep at a good clip. I just think he's such a rarity to have feet like that with his size and to pair him alongside Christian Wood, who's like a perfect, you know, floor spacing four who can also rim run. If you can hold on to John Wall, you've got your point guard there. And John Wall's not that old. And he actually looked pretty good this year, especially from a playmaking standpoint. So I just think that like he's more of a cornerstone of your team. A lot of people, just from what I'm listening to and what do they know, are saying that Cade and Mobley are kind of in their own class. And then 3 through 5 are also like they're their tier two. I like Suggs a lot. But what I sent you is I think if you see Suggs at 3, the Cavs are going to pass because they already have two guards. They've got Sexton, they've got Garland, and they're going to be forced to take Jalen Green. And then the Raptors are going to end up with Jalen Suggs, which is kind of where I want him to go anyway. Go learn with Fred VanVleet. That's a great 1-2 punch. He doesn't have to step in and be the guy immediately. Like he'll succeed.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it and like, okay, in the modern NBA, you need a primary ball handler who can do it all. And Suggs has that potential. And that's why if the Rockets are restarting in my book, I'm anticipating Wall not being there, which isn't necessarily fair because as of now he is on the roster.
Yeah.
But I think if I'm restarting a franchise, at least just give me that guard so I know I'm starting off on the right foot. That being said, I mean, I think Mobley, obviously we saw him play in high school. Toss, you were very underwhelmed. So was I. But I think he really impressed us. I think seeing what Ayton's done and seeing what's, you know, in this playoffs. And I
mean, that's kind of the example you look to, right? Yeah. Like you look at year three and Ayton's put in the work. Like he wasn't there year one. He wasn't there last year. Even at some points this year, he had a tough time buying in because it was Chris Paul's team and he had to adjust, but he has adjusted. And now look how valuable he's become in this Western Conference Finals. He's the third best player in the series. And it definitely shows. I mean, he's dominating glass.
He's dominated every series. He's kind of irreplaceable. He really is living up to, again, like that billing, like we were talking about last episode, the number one pick. So I could get behind the Rockets, like, again, restarting with, you know, they have Wood unless they move him.
They also love taking franchise history. They love taking big men in the top part of the draft.
Ralph Sampson, Hakeem Olajuwon, man.
Yao Ming.
All their first picks have been bigs. That have been in the top three. The Cavs pass. I think also, let me say this. I think not enough people have watched a lot of the top tier scout mock draft, you know, hoopla guys have not watched enough G League. Cause I think this Jalen Green kid is going to turn some heads. I don't think it's like, I think he's being overlooked a little bit.
I think he's ready to go. He's ready to go.
Kuminga is blatant.
Kuminga's not.
Yeah.
He's not ready to go. He's a project.
Which why?
He's a project, but he's got scary athleticism though. If you can tap into that and you can kind of fine tune him. I mean, you look at a guy like Paul George, could not shoot he can now in college. That just wasn't there, but he had the 6'9 build. He was a rangy defender. He had the makings of what would be a good stroke. And before he got hurt, I mean, like he was one of the best high flyers in the league. Yeah. So, you know, that's the prototype, but we've fallen in love. The NBA has fallen in love with people like that in the past. And it's bitten them in the ass. So
yeah, multiple times. Honestly, like Davion Mitchell is not as sexy, but he's going to be a good player at the minimum. I think Kispert's going to be a good player at the minimum. I think guys like Kuminga and Scotty Barnes are a bit more risky and a bit more like
even our boy, the Longhorn, Kai Jones. He's a bit of a risk.
You could lock him in as the member of the Thunder. The Thunder with their second pick are going to take him. Because they have nothing to lose. They have so many picks, they could run that risk. A team that can run the risk is going to take the risk on Kai Jones, and it's going to pay off. He's an uber athlete. But I think the draft's going to be really exciting. I'm licking my chops to delve into some mocks. Carl Nassib.
Speaking of Uber athletes,
oh,
Keon Johnson had a 48-inch max vertical at the combine. It's an NBA record.
Yeah, he's going to be a lotto pick.
48.
Sure. He's a
lotto pick. Athletic. He just needs to get some sort of jump shot and figure out how to be a multi-level scorer, and he'll have a spot on an NBA roster for sure. And yeah, possibly a starting spot.
I'm trying to think.
He's one of those project guys too.
Yeah, he's a
but 4 feet
he's
got off the ground.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
He has that defense in him already, though. So I think the Magic with their second pick at the eighth, like you can kind of, you know, the Magic.
He just, he feels like RJ Hampton to me. Like they already have that guy.
He's already more of an offensive player than he is. I think he's, I don't know. I was just kind of going from the mold of like, hey, you have Isaac, you have Wendell Carter. You could really continue to build on this defensive stalwart you have in Orlando and really play some bruised basketball. And you have RJ and you have Cole Anthony. You like have two really great offensive guards. You use that pick on the wing and Kuminga is the project. And all of a sudden you have a deep team and a versatile team.
Yeah. That's crazy though. So I actually think that he could jump over you, Josh. And you can't jump over him. Keon Johnson.
I know several people he could jump over for sure.
Yeah.
Several. Including me, my future roommate. The Carl Nassib.
Talk about Carl Nassib.
Yeah, Carl Nassib. Amazing. We were pumped. Everyone was happy. This is good for him. I was a little obviously it's shocking. You know, you're not like sitting there thinking it's gonna happen. Everyone kind of fell in love with him on Hard Knocks. So.
Yeah, I think it was really meaningful, and that's part of the reason is because we got to meet this guy.
Yeah. You
know, and that's cool. Like, I think we all like watching Hard Knocks, and it gives us a little window into like what these guys are really like, because as we've talked about multiple times on the pod, like they wear helmets on the sideline, you know, like we don't really get to interact with them outside of the big name guys like
Brandon. And he had a moment too. He had that moment where he's talking about finance, like talking about like how he's like, I met Taylor Swift, I was gonna buy a Rolex, but like I didn't because like my financials are important to me. Like, and he was jarving with Greg Williams, who like obviously is an asshole. I mean, there's a lot of good moments for him in there. I was a little disappointed that some of it was overshadowed by some negativity around it. People like the way it was phrased, like the first active openly gay player. And people were like, well, what about Michael Sam? Which is like kind of was just a little unfortunate for me. It was just kind of taking away from the moment. I understand like why people were getting involved in that respect, but I think it was taking away from the moment. And I was also annoyed that they weren't stepping up, but I was also annoyed that was like also a focus of other NFL players not really getting involved. Like if you look at like who tweeted out support outside a couple of his teammates and obviously like the NFLPA, Dell, coaches, none of the big guns outside obviously like Watt really came in and said anything.
I think Saquon said something.
Teammate, Penn State teammate.
Oh, Penn State teammate.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to open the door for a lot of players to come out if that's something that's going to happen. I mean, you saw Colton Underwood of The Bachelor do it, and he was in the NFL for a minute. And of course there was Michael Sam, but I mean, this is the first active player, right? It's always been an issue where guys want to feel comfortable in a locker room. And that's always been the biggest, I guess, issue within the NFL is that, you know, guys don't want to come out because they feel like it's going to ruin relationships with their teammates. But I feel like this probably does the opposite. You know, with a guy like Carl, who's liked by his organization and, you know, a lot of people gravitated towards him in Hard Knocks, like we mentioned, I think it's a good champion to kind of be the first person to come out and say something and hopefully opens the door for more guys to do it if they want to.
Mm. Yeah, it was a really nice moment the other day. So congratulations to him. Shout out to his family in the best way.
He really seems like a great guy. You watch that video and it's just like, he's very endearing. I just want to be his friend, you know?
Yeah, be his homie.
And it's also obviously great for people that are not professional athletes as well.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. His jersey was the number one selling jersey. I mean, you know, like just from a monetary standpoint of view.
Over the last 2 days?
Yeah.
That's great.
NFL was pumped. I mean, NFL's actually done a really great job in Pride, honestly. A lot of their logos are like rainbow. I think they've done a really excellent job. I mean, we've seen them want to include female fans and like they've been one of the people at the forefront, I've always felt, as far as inclusion on fans. like kind of going out of their way to make it more, not just like dudes watching sports, even though it's like one of the hardest hitting sports, ironically. Speaking of other sports, baseball, a lot has been made. And this is, again, like baseball just needs to stop putting on a show every time something's a rule change or an issue. And like, they're obviously checking guys now mid game. The opposing manager can request a check for illegal substance on the pitcher. We saw Sergio Romo of the Athletics do it. We saw Max Scherzer of the Washington Nationals do it. They just start undressing themselves and pulling down their pants. And it's like funny and like putting on a circus, but it needs to be more concentrated. And Manfred's like, oh yeah, it's going well. Well, it's not going well. And I think it needs to be more concentrated in the sense that have designated times. Or have two, like be like at the top of the inning, we're going to check when the cameras aren't rolling before you get going. And if you don't have anything then, so be it. Like, we can't fully micromanage the game any further.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to speed up the game or do you want to make sure pitchers aren't having foreign substances on their balls? And I mean, Manfred says it's going well. And I don't necessarily think it's going well because I think a lot of pitchers are annoyed. And you saw the frustration in Max Scherzer and you saw the frustration in Sergio Romo. And I mean, you're seeing the frustration from Trevor Bauer today, you know, in the Padres-Dodgers game. It's they're annoyed. I mean, this is something that is they've never had to do it before. Some of these guys have been playing the game for 10 plus years. And this is the first time it's coming out mid-season too. I mean, yes, it's obviously affecting the play. You're looking at spin rates and Trevor Bauer's spin rates are way down over the last couple of games compared to his last season where he was untouchable. So, I mean, I'm sure he's a little flustered because he doesn't have the same juice that he used to, but
you look really upset about, you look really upset about Bauer not feeling well out there in the mound, Nick.
What was that?
Really, you look really heartbroken about Bauer not feeling well on the mound right now.
Oh yeah, I'm torn to pieces.
He's like relaying this information with a huge smile on his face.
I mean, I took pictures of his spin rates. I mean, they're way down. I mean, they're not like way down, but like I think they're down like 400 RPMs.
They're all doing it.
Yeah, no, they're all doing it. I mean, we mentioned it when Gerrit Cole had his press conference. He looked like he saw a ghost. He looked like he, you know, got caught with something and he didn't know how to respond to it. I mean, the best pitchers in baseball do it. And I wouldn't be surprised if DeGrom does it. They all need a competitive edge.
They've been checking DeGrom. I don't know. He's like the one.
No one's gotten caught since the checking. So no one's doing it right now actively, but I'm saying like in the past, I mean, all of these guys have done it and not necessarily using the spider tack, but it could be just a form of sunscreen and sweat or rosin, right? Like that's, the rosin bag is behind the mound every single pitch. That's there for a reason. Guys mix that with sweat. Guys mix that with pine tar. Guys mix that with sunscreen. I mean, it's not like they're using steroids. It's not like they're actually, you know, manipulating the ball with, you know, like a razor blade or something. People used to dry out baseballs. They used to soak them. They used to soak brand new balls and they used to leave them in the sun so they dry out. So the seams would raise, right? So you can get a better grip on it and it would break harder because it would cut harder because the raised inseams.
Yeah, you got a better grip on it. I forgot about that. That's a great point to bring up. Yeah, I mean, baseball, I mean, look, they're figuring it out. And again, Nick, you had brought up this point and you were 100% right when you said this. We can't have changes mid-season. Do it before, do it after. A mid-season change, it's going to bring negative. It's just never going to bring positive energy. It just doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's bringing negativity to the game. That's really, I've been watching this Padres-Dodgers game and literally all they talk about is checking the pitchers. Oh, Bauer looks flustered he's getting checked, or Musgrove got checked here. Oh, we watched Scherzer get checked. It's like, let's just play the game.
I mean, the announcer,
let them check it in the TV timeout and let's not even talk about it. If someone makes a stink about it, sure, you can mention that, but we don't have to look at every single check.
Yeah, baseball announcers can be the best and the worst at the same time, honestly.
Well, ESPN's the woe when it comes to baseball announcers. I'll say that.
I like the national guys for basketball. Obviously, I love the national guys for football. I really like the local guys for baseball. The local guys for baseball, they know their team like the back of their hand, and you need to.
And they're energetic and they're excited.
And I mean, the Mets guys, Darling and Hernandez, are just absolutely fantastic. They were like the local guys for like my hometown, obviously. And, you know, I know Toss hates any kind of Boston announcer because of the accent.
No, I don't like the Celtics guy.
The Celtics deal.
He's like 80, dude. He's just really old. He's just a step behind when it comes to what's going down on the court. And Scal's actually pretty good, who's his co-host. But
yeah,
we don't need to talk about the Celtics local announcers.
But yeah, I do prefer them to the national. But I always like the national guys for basketball and football. Cool. We'll wrap it up there. That was a fun one, quick and easy. Guys, this is our Thursday show radio.
Oh, well, yeah. Before we finish. You're wearing a jersey right now, Josh.
Oh yeah,
wearing an Islanders jersey. They won Game 6, so now it's going to 7 against the Tampa Bay Lightning, seeing if the Lightning can win back-to-back Stanley Cups.
And that's the Lightning.
So I highly
forced overtime to force the Game 7.
The goal was great. It was a clean goal. I don't like the goals in hockey when there's like a muffle around. It's like tip drill. I like it when it's
and it was on the island. It was on the island, which is great.
Yeah, they were throwing beer cans at the end of the game. I was like, all right, let's not do that. I mean, people in New York are people on the island are out of their minds. Right. But the only New York team I root for, I'm not a fan, obviously, and everyone knows that, but I'll root for them just because they literally are on the island.
Whereas I would just say
New York team.
A suggestion for any of our listeners, even if you've never watched a game of hockey, even if you haven't watched any games in this regular season of the NHL or any of the playoff games thus far, You should tune in for this game because
I'm soaked. I'm gonna
game sevens in hockey are one of the best sporting events to watch, hands down.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Hands absolutely. Up.
Hands up.
Let's
hands
fight.
Down, hands up. Let's fight. Yeah, I think we did our bet online thing, and I think we're good after that. Fans out there, drag both feet in bounds, swing on a full count, rip that puck at that putt, hit your PKs because they free. Go check us out on the radio. We're gonna be blasting it everywhere. It's in our link tree. We'll obviously throw the episode up. We have a great special guest, a really interesting special guest. Obviously, it's one that we don't usually do, but this is gonna be a super fun one for you guys on Monday. Hint, hint, Netflix. Hit your free throws, guys. Why?
Because they're free.
Paul George, they are free. We out.
Hands up.
We love you. Hands up. Let's fight.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.